Welcome to The Standard. The Standard is on a mission to champion the pursuit of excellence and fight against the celebration of mediocrity. For those who refuse to lower their standards, for those who can't raise their own, this is The Standard. For fitness, for family, for life.
Were you ever in a band?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
I was in a band called Waistband Tuck.
Where's that
Waistband Tuck?
Yeah, when like...
Oh, that makes sense for
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about when you're like in elementary school? You guys know what I'm talking about.
No, I didn't wear sweats to school like you did. No.
You got a fight coming up, don't you?
Yeah.
A couple days?
3 days now.
Woo!
Friday.
What's that look like for you for your like pre-fight prep?
A lot of consuming water, a lot of consuming very low calorie food or very little food at all. Lots of nerves. I'm a wreck. Like the day of the fight, every time it just is so. I build up that anxiety, but mainly it's just trying to make the weight. The next few days, I'm off. I'm going to go swimming, relax, hopefully not think about it all too much. And then when fight comes, I'll meet the weight and we'll step in there. He'll punch me, I'll punch him. It'll be a fantastic day.
Is it the type of thing where you feel nervous and then the bell rings and then you get going and then you just like the nerves go away and you rely on everything you practice? Is that how it feels like? I mean, for you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Whatever you don't practice or train in to be second nature is not going to happen in the fight. And the moment, I wouldn't say like the bell goes off, but the moment the first punch is thrown, your feelings subside. A lot of it just comes from the fact you're in an audience. You're performing for people, and so that whole stage fright thing can come into play. It could be a new environment. There's lots of lights on you. But once you guys hit each other, it goes back to that kind of primal, we're in the gym, we're just trying to beat each other up and see who comes out on top vibe. And so it's a much easier way to relax at that point.
What's like your prep for trying to make weight? Like how much are you trying to lose before weigh-ins?
If I was being a good boy, I would have only had to lose like 15 pounds, but I got injured back in February and I just decided cake was now my best friend. And so I started putting on all the pounds. I think I was 205 in my highest and I had to get down to 70 for this fight in like a month and a half. Mm. So I went pretty hard. I was drinking 2 gallons of water a day. I was mainly raw vegetable. I had some protein here and there. I went vegan for a period of time. And now as we get to the end, I'm just going to be slowly cutting back on everything, period. So probably night before or day of the weigh-ins, this Wednesday night and Thursday, not going to have anything, probably very little to no water, no food, and walk in there, not half dead, but just really, really irritable, like very, very hangry, get the weigh-ins done, go have lunch, and it'll be a relaxing day after that. But it was this particular one was hard. Normally, got a few months out, I can just kind of ease up on the diet, not as much sweets, a lot more activity, same amount of water, and I'll get down the weight pretty easy. But because I decided that I was going to be 30 pounds heavier than I needed to be, I had to put in the extra work.
And then how much time do you have between weigh-ins and like to refuel?
Thankfully, this time, I got a whole day.
Oh,
I got
nice.
Over a day, actually. Yeah, some events will do same-day weigh-ins where you go in the morning, get your weight done, and then you have the afternoon to recoup before the fight in the evening. This one's day before weigh-in, so I'll go in Thursday, get the weight done, have a little bit of a ceremony where they, videotape us staring at each other like we want to kiss angrily, and then we're going to go have lunch and relax, and the next day in the afternoon, we come back to hit each other.
How legit is that weigh-in when everyone's kind of looking angrily at each other? Is there a lot of kind of fugazi about that, or are you genuinely as mad as everyone looks?
Oh, no, I like my opponent. He's a good guy, actually. I imagine we'd be pretty good friends outside of this event.
Okay.
The way I've been told was you can do it to hype the fight. You can obviously, people like seeing some hostility, kind of like being the heel back in the WWE days where you're just kind of a dick to everyone. People like watching you get beat up, or maybe you guys have beef for whatever reason, and people want to see that drama unplaying the cage. But yeah, I smile at my opponents. I'll chit-chat with them right in the middle. We're standing there looking at each other, or we'll fist bump or high five. And when you go to fight, you turn that off for the next however many minutes you're fighting. Sometimes it's 9 if you're in the lower levels, as high as 15 or 25 in the upper levels. You just turn that off for a little bit. And when the fight's over, you go back to being buddies if you want. But some guys do hate each other. Some guys genuinely have actual animosity towards one another, and it shows when they fight. But especially in my position now, no, I think a lot of my guys have just been really cool, to be honest.
Do you think you would fight better or worse if you came into a fight with animosity? Like, you know, you'd have that anger, but it might make you do things that you normally wouldn't do, you know, and put you in situations you normally wouldn't, just because you want to punish that other person so bad that you're not smart about it.
Yeah. The way I would think about it is, you kind of want to be a little bit aggressive and hostile. You don't have to loathe your opponent, but you should be more than happy to inflict as much damage as possible on them. If they've already done something to piss you off, that's probably going to be okay, as long as you don't lose yourself in that kind of raw emotion, because you don't want to make those mistakes. You don't want to look at them and just start going ham because they pissed you off. You want to still remain relatively smart about what you're doing. But I think if I was to fight completely angry, just balls to the wall, and I'm trying to slaughter this guy in any way possible, I'd probably get tagged or hit a lot more than I would like to be, because it's going to make you dumb. I'm just, at that point, I'm only caring about hitting him and not keeping myself safe during that fight.
Are you you more of a striker, or you more of, you know, what's kind of your specialty?
Oh, I punch people for sure. It's so much easier. I wrestling has dominated the sport for the last decade, and I'm so tired of it. I hate going to the ground. It's my least favorite thing in the world to do. I'd much rather stand up and have this guy punch me in the face than ever deal with him on the ground. I don't care if he sucks on the ground. Just hit me. I don't even want to test those waters. I just want to stay on my feet and be comfy.
I remember MMA getting started. It was like Ken Shamrock, and, you know, you'd only see it on pay-per-views. Randleman? Was that who's the guy with that white hair? White, big, huge black dude. Kevin Randleman? No, I meant him. But anyways, now it seems like they have a UFC, you know, big, huge event a couple times a year. So many more people are into it. I mean, what do you think, like, made it so popular?
It's just, I think it's more or less evolved through the times. As it became more widely accepted, you know, way back when, there were several states back in 93, 94, 95 that were just completely banning all MMA events. I would read articles of these kids who were like, oh, I got to go to Underground Smokers if I want to get started and hopefully get to the UFC or get to these other labels that are kind of doing it in the States. But as time went on and it became more widely accepted, started making its pay-per-view debuts, it started getting on social media platforms when those became popular back in the mid-early 2000s, it got a lot more comforting, or people got more comfortable with it. And so it began to grow. More people joined MMA who maybe never would have. More companies saw the financial value behind these fights like they did boxing. And a lot of the initial pushback was just because it's too violent. That's what it always comes down to. Same reason bare knuckle boxing was not a sport, or at least a legal sport, for the longest time, because it's too violent. It potential risk of harm to the body, or the viewership may not appreciate seeing all the blood and the gore. So they didn't want to put it on. And once it started happening more often, they got funding from the Gracie Jiu-Jitsu family, and they got funding from them to continue hosting these events early on. It just kind of excited people who were looking for that next big thing. Boxing was great for a while. Kickboxing had been around for a while. And now here's the next level of competition people can strive to be a part of. And that's what really helped the sport grow.
This episode's brought to you by the Patreon. Our patrons are members that want more from our community. So for just a few dollars a month, you get more episodes, you can get free gear, you get an opportunity for conference calls, and even to vote on future episodes. Check out our website at the-standard.us and sign up.
You said you've been punching people your whole life. And one of your things in your bio said, you know, early on in your childhood, you lost your dad. And that contributed to maybe you're just lashing out, right? It was kind of your way to cope with that loss at an early age, maybe. You just had a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. Was that accurate?
Yeah, it was coupled, because my dad passed, and then I had the whole family unit that was his side of the family. But when he passed, they all left. So I just really didn't know how to deal with that as a kid. And actually, even before I got into martial arts, I was punching people, because I decided to go around and start getting in fights in school, because that was a great way for me to handle it. And I remember being a little child pretending to be an airplane. And when a kid got too close to my wings, I would just run them straight into their face. And hopefully I didn't get caught, which of course I did, because it's kind of a big way to get attention. And so I get in school, out of school suspension. They were close to trying to expel me. And so my mom's like, this is crazy, and just chucked me into the nearest martial arts class she could find. And thankfully, it all worked out from there. I started getting beat up by people who were way better than me. And I decided this is a bad idea to be, you know, screwing around with people who I don't know what they can do.
Yeah, we were talking about that before we came on the air about how careful I was saying. I'm careful when I go out in public and get in. And you put yourself in any bad situation, you just don't know what the capabilities of anybody else is that you might get into beef with, you know, because there's a lot of people out there that are very dangerous with just their two fists or, you know, whatever their martial art background is. And you think that you're just going to brawl with a guy and you might get yourself into something you wish you hadn't. And that's one thing, you know, going back to the beginning of when UFC started coming around and on TV, it's like that certainly changes the way I, especially you're out in public. It's like, well, you may not be as tough as you think you are, and you better be careful in who you pick a fight with, because there's a lot of people out there that have some skills.
Yeah, you know, Faraz Zahabi was on the Joe Rogan podcast a while ago, and they had this good conversation about understanding what violence is and how it can impact people's lives on a daily basis. And when you compete and you fight and you experience it regularly, be it in a karate class or a wrestling class, you experience what another human being could do to you when they are simply better at you in combat. It changes your mindset. You may walk in thinking you're the biggest, baddest street fighter in your neighborhood. You know, you're 5-0 against those preschoolers down the road, but you walk into an MMA gym and you get your shit rocked by a guy who's 50 pounds lighter than you, but has been doing this for the last 5 years of his life. You learn very fast, oh, maybe I can't just start picking on people because I perceive how they look and I think they're an easy target. For God's sakes, what was that story of the guy who was harassing Mike Tyson, that drunk guy on the airplane?
Oh, yeah. Oh man.
He thought for whatever reason that Mike Tyson may be old, or maybe he's got more skills, or maybe he's deserving of Mike Tyson's time and he can't be ignored. Well, he got the kind of attention no one in their life ever wants.
Fact.
So it really teaches you when you get into a situation where you do martial arts or you do some kind of competitive combat where you're like, my body's not really as tough as I'd like it to be or what I'd imagine myself being. And maybe I'm just taking on these guys who aren't really as tough as me, but I could hit up the wrong person one day and that could be the end. I could be lights out. I can be in a breathing through a tube for the rest of my life. So it makes you, I don't think it should frighten people, but it certainly makes you think twice before you do something stupid.
Yeah. Even if you do have a little bit of background, you take that same physical interaction that you would be on the mats for and you bring it into a bar or outside on the concrete. That is a completely different situation.
No rules.
Not only are there no rules, but like getting your face smushed into a plush wrestling mat as opposed to gravel.
A curb,
right? Yeah. Like those are, and the consequences are just like so grave. I was a bouncer, I know me, for
you were tough.
No, I'm not. Rather doughy and soft, but luckily, you know, first of all, you always have an advantage because everyone's drunk and you're sober and you just outnumber people, right? Like luckily my good friend Ben was on here. He's 6'7", 300 pounds. Like, you know, he's going to handle some business, but you would see these, you know, drunk people fighting each other and it's just, there's no skill. There's no tact. It's just,
sloppy.
Yeah. I'm going to throw haymakers.
Yeah.
But if you catch somebody correctly, you could, I mean, theoretically end their life.
I still remember to this day, I was in college and it was, you know, last call's over, everybody, bars are clearing out. And then here come all the tough guys that are drunk and big old crowd and two guys are going at it. And then you think that it's you and this other guy. And somebody comes up just out of the crowd and sucker punches this guy from behind. He's out, hits the ground. I mean, you know, fractured jaw, yeah. Everything. Like, that's, I mean, it's just it's something you don't even consider, right? You're thinking what we talked about earlier is like, I'm careful who I mess with because you don't know what they're capable of. Well, you might be sizing up this one guy and it's going to be me and you. And then somebody else pulls a punch. You have no chance of defending. And I mean, his injuries were bad, but I can still see that punch to this day. And that was one of the reasons too. It's like, man, just, you're in a crowd. You don't know what can happen. Yeah. You just have, there are no rules, man.
No. And you're taking a huge chance anytime you do a street brawl. Cause it could be your friends jumping in on the other guy, his friends jumping in, a completely different third party who just thought that fighting would be cool right now. Jump in.
Yeah.
And that's why we have illegal shots in the cage, because there are certain things you can do that can genuinely ruin someone's career or life for all of eternity. one shot to the back of the head is more, yes, could put you out, could put you to sleep, but it can also lead to severe brain trauma or death, depending on where you land, what your impact's like. People stomping on your knee, on your face, these things aren't allowed because they can lead to severe injury. For God's sakes, nut shots. You can kick a guy in the balls all day long in a street fight.
Yeah, over and over after he's out. Multiple
people can do it, yeah.
Yeah,
that's my go-to move. Straight to the testicles, right? Every single time.
That sounds like something you would do.
Yeah. Speaking of injuries, you know, you see almost 100% of the people that they have tested for CTE in the NFL have had it. And a large number of even like high school football players have had CTE. Is that a conversation that's happening in your sport?
In my sport, in combat, is it combat and sports in general? Yes. MMA, no. And I think that's because it's still relatively new. And so a lot of people are more or less afraid to talk about that. I think they mostly would consider it to be pretty bad for business. You start discouraging people to compete, you lose clientele, you lose fights. And that's a very long-term concern in general. It's not like we're going to talk about it right now and right. discourage 100,000 people from ever doing it. But that's the idea. It often gets led back to boxing because in the cage, you're more likely to get superficial injuries. And superficial to me is like you can get a cut under the eye, under the eyeball. You can break an arm. You can get things that'll heal in its due time and not lead to like 10 years, 12 years, 15 years down the line. A severe injury, unless of course you tear an ACL or something that is more of a long-term injury. Mm-hmm. Brain damage wise, you're more likely to see it in things like boxing. And the reason why you'd see it more in boxing is because they don't have the option as often to get cut up like an MMA fighter guy does. You get sliced under the eye and the doctor says, hey, you can't compete anymore because that's too bad. Fight's over. Your brain may not have sustained much damage, but your face did. That'll heal. You might scar up. You'll look ugly one day, but you appear will be relatively fine. Boxers not having that option can sometimes go the whole 12 rounds just sloshing in their head, their brain going back and forth, getting beat to hell, but no superficial injuries. No reason to exactly stop the fight as far as the doctors are concerned, unless there's an actual knockout, which of course, even of itself, can knock out, being concussed. That's brain damage, which will occur or come to light down the road.
I would just see, like, as a striker, that would be something that you would, I mean, obviously consider, I would consider pretty heavily, like, man, I'd eventually this thing that I love doing, this passion that I have, and I think we see it for us in our job as firemen, is like cancer is that thing that everybody talks about. It's going to happen to you, like, maybe it will way later down the road, and no one really considers it at the time.
Yeah,
but I think it's going to affect, you know, that's going to affect us. And obviously brain injury, that kind of stuff's going to affect your.
Yeah. It's, I think I would speak for you, Bear, maybe, in saying that just like firemen, we take on a little bit of as an inherent risk. You guys do the same thing as fighters. I mean, it's just part of the sport. You know, there's a risk to playing any sport. That's the risk to being a fighter, but
that shows how much you love
what
you
do. You know, you try to manage it, but I don't think you can't eliminate all risk from life, you know?
It's kind of cost of doing business.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that point. And actually, for you guys, a lot more respect in your line of work because you're not – MMA, while it is a team sport, it's a very selfish sport. I'm out there. The camera's all on me. I'm making the big bucks. And sure, I pay some people when it comes time to, like, coaches, dietitians. But it's mainly about me. In the long run, when people talk about fighters and history of fighting, it's the competitors that come up, not necessarily their dietitian from down the road. But you guys, you're putting it all on the line for individuals, other people on a regular basis. Some days could be light work. Some days could be the hardest day you've ever experienced. And so it kind of sucks that there is that inherent risk of cancer, or in our case, inherent risk of brain damage. But I think you put it very, very right when you say it's about love. You want to do this. This makes you happy. So even though there is a risk of this, you do everything you can to minimize that, but you're not going to stop.
Yeah.
It's almost like when your feeling of risk outweighs your love for whatever it is you're doing, I think that's maybe when a lot of athletes step away.
The juice is worth the squeeze.
Yeah. That's when, you know, it's like when you start thinking, you know, oh man, I hope I don't get hit. I hope I don't get a concussion. This, you know, you start worrying about that in your future. I think that's when a lot of guys probably say they lose the edge, and it's like, okay, it's time to step away.
Yeah.
When your mom got you, she basically just threw you into martial arts. Was there a specific one that you kind of gravitated towards? Because they're all so, like, crazy different.
Yeah, I only knew one. It wasn't like there was a we didn't have a lot of variety in the area we're in. Desert Hot Springs is relatively small. Like there were, I think there was another karate gym at the time and this taekwondo gym that I ended up going to. But my mom got it off advice from a different person whose child was in that gym. And so she's like, that's great. Go here. And I never had another option I was aware of. I never decided to try anything else. I just thought, no, I'll stick around here. This is fun. I immediately enjoyed what was happening. And later on down the line, they started to incorporate other martial arts into the gym anyway. So I never felt the need to like try out anything else. But I've certainly since learned that, oh, there's a lot of great martial arts I could have done or should get involved in now. No, it was really just, I was almost immediately happy with what I was doing, learning to kick and punch at that dojo. It made me quite excited to be involved in martial arts.
That's awesome. One thing I love about your Instagram, Bear, is you talk about how an average Joe would do against like whatever that martial art might be. What is a common theme where you're like, I think you have your best shot against this type of martial artist and you are dead to rights with this other one?
I try and base it off what would actually happen in a fight. Like if I've watched enough jiu-jitsu matches to know how that would go. I've watched enough wrestling matches, Muay Thai matches, MMA matches, whatever it is, to understand what's most likely going to happen to a guy who's never experienced this before. So I try and give him that, you know, everyone's got that fighter's chance. You may throw that one haymaker that catches the pro and that could be it. Because a professional human being in the world of combat is built no physically different than you are. They may have better endurance, more muscles, but everyone can get knocked out from any random shot that you just accidentally didn't see. And so when I make these videos, I try and give everyone that caveat of, you always have a shot. Everyone who has no training, they all have 30 seconds of good wind before they're completely tired and are useless in a fight. And so I say in that first 30 seconds, you might have it in you to score on the pro. You might knock out that wrestler before he can grab you. That kickboxer may not be able to throw his head kicks before you're able to put him down on the ground. Something like that. But it more or less turns into how badly they're going to beat you up and in which ways.
Yeah, I went into my first jiu-jitsu class as a I wrestled in high school, and I gave up my neck in the first, like, I don't know, 10 seconds of rolling with somebody, just because that's what you're used to. I think what's cool about MMA is you can't just have just one. You can't have, hey, I am a this. That person's going to find another way to end your day.
Oh, yeah. No, the days of that are over. Now, that said, it's wonderful that you're in wrestling because that actually, like I said, has dominated the sport for quite some time now. You can't just have wrestling on its own. But one of my coaches, Joe Stevenson, won 4 UFC fights back-to-back, like 4-0, just wrestling. No strikes thrown whatsoever. So there's at a certain level and ability, you can kind of become a specialist. Like, you got specialist boxers, you got specialist kickboxers, wrestlers, grapplers. But if you don't have something else to account for maybe what the other guy can do, you're in a horrible spot. It's fine to be a one-trick pony to a point. But like you said, giving up your neck, you're going to make some mistakes that maybe you would have otherwise been aware of by testing the waters at different gyms in different styles.
Talk to us about your gym. The gym you open up, it's free for, I mean.
Is it free for everybody?
Yeah. We started it back in 2018. It's called Free MMA, and it's located in Cathedral City, California. I started it with my mom back in the summer of 2018 because we both were on the same idea. Martial arts improve my life. We want to improve everyone's life. So our goal was to make it so no one had to pay for classes, whether or not they could afford it or they could. Because when I was training up, you know, kind of in the ghetto, when my friends who I was training with couldn't afford it anymore, be it because they ran out of money or it's better for their parents to put the money towards electricity than a martial arts class, they'd fall into drugs. Some got into gangs and a couple of them actually died. And so to me, if they had stayed in martial arts, these would never have happened to them. And I don't want anyone to have to suffer through those kind of choices, either on a firsthand basis or it's your buddy doing it and you witness it secondhand. And so if we can create that space for anyone who maybe want to come blow off steam, who maybe wants to compete one day, maybe they feel unsafe in their environment and they just want to learn how to protect themselves, that was the idea. And so 2018 kicked off. We signed up over probably 500 students in the first half year. Now, we don't. Now, of course, not every 500 student came, but maybe they all came at one point. But we had a consistent 30, 50 students every week or so for the classes. That continued on for about 2 years, and then COVID hit. And so when COVID hit, everything, of course, went shut down. We lost all the students. We had a fight team at the gym. They all disbanded and didn't want to come back. And so about 2021, late 2021 time, we got the opportunity to reopen and bring everyone back, or as many people as possible. And we're happy to say that we're able to stay afloat. We had some wonderful supporters, wonderful companies that helped us out, including our landlord company, who was actually able to cut us on the rent and help us continue the business, keep it afloat. And then by about, I want to say, roughly just a few months ago or so, we started to really pick up and blow up again. People got comfortable coming outside. People were happy to go do martial arts. People were happy to come and get back in physical shape. Because a lot of times we just all took that time off and ate whatever we felt like, because we don't have to go anywhere. No one to present to.
It's that cake, man. And cake's sitting around.
Yeah. I get it. That's my, and more of my kryptonites. How do you fund it?
So, like I said, we have individual and corporate sponsors. We have different businesses who will support the nonprofit. Government grants was a big way we did it prior. We also have the city of Cathedral City supporting us too. The mayor donated to us, and we're looking at other government bodies in the area who want to support, because it's a community project. And I'll just say that it's not like free to that one city and everyone else has to pay for it. It specifically comes from, or for, the valley we're in Coachella Valley. Anyone can do it. Anyone from outside the valley can do it. And when they do donate to us, it's going to support kids of different backgrounds and organizations. And that's how we're able to tell them, hey, this is who your money's going to. Like, one of them is called Father's Home. And Father's Home is a place where they take in young men who have come from homes of sexual abuse. And so we'll bring those kids into the gym. We'll teach them self-defense, confidence, and leadership skills. And when people are like, oh, well, what am I donating to? Or can I come check it out? Who are we supporting? I can show them and tell them these are the kind of kids they're helping out when you do fund our program.
Wow. So do you go out to specific programs like that and say, hey, I think your group could benefit from this, or do they come to you?
Both. In that case with Father's Home, they found us. But we've also worked with like the senior citizens. They have a, I can't remember exactly what the business is called, but basically the senior center over in Cathedral City hosted an event that we were putting on where I went and taught a self-defense class for them. The Boys and Girls Club, I reached out to them in both the Palm Springs and the Cathedral City area. So two different cities, got a chance to work with their Boys and Girls Club for the kids. It works both ways. Once we built up the name in the first year or so, we started having companies and individuals reach out to us because they want their kids in, or they want their groups in, or what have you. And then, of course, we would reciprocate by reaching back out and saying, let's do another event. Let's find ways to shuttle your kids. Maybe it's an after-school program. They done with their homework. They come to the gym class. Their parents pick them up. But it definitely goes both ways.
I'm sure you got a few success stories or turnaround stories from just having this gym open, having these kids come in. Is there one that sticks out to you more than the others, you know, over the past 3-4 years that – you know, you had a kid come in there and turned everything around?
Yeah, I have two of them that stick out to me. Both of them young ladies. One of them had come in, and she was actually assaulted at a previous gym. And so she did not want to be in, it was a jiu-jitsu gym, so she didn't want any part of it, nothing. She wanted to never be on the ground at all. So all I did with her was I did boxing drills over and over again. And from there, she decided one day, okay, can I spar? I'm okay with contact to that extent. And I was like, cool, let's do it. So she started sparring with some of the other younger students. She is actually pretty good and started sparring with some of the adults as she got older. And then before the pandemic hit, she had started to grapple a little bit. And I heard through the grapevine that during the pandemic, when our business had to shut down, other gyms stayed open, and she was able to be comfortable enough to go in these other gyms, grapple. And she's now looking to actually compete in the mixed martial arts world. And so that to me was like, hell yeah, this is where she started. I was able to help get her some confidence, make sure she was comfortable going back into this industry that she obviously didn't want to give up in. She just kind of was deterred for a while. And so I was really excited for her, and I reached out to her and I told her how proud I am of her. And the second girl was actually defended herself from a home robbery during COVID. She'd come to us for a few years. She on and off would train. She wasn't as consistent, but I gave her enough to where she could protect herself. But in the middle of the pandemic, most of her family, except her mother, went off on vacation. They stayed home, and two people broke into the house and held them at gunpoint. And the man is holding the gun, and the woman's going through and clearing out their house. And at some point, they got the gun to be down or out of the way, and she just cold cocked this guy as hard as she could, laid him out, broke her pinky finger. He was completely done. The mother jumped on the lady. The police showed up, and they came back, and she said to me directly, I didn't do anything smart, but I had the confidence to act because I've been here with you, and I can't tell you how thankful I am for that.
Oh, well worth the broken.
Awesome. Movie. Hell yeah.
Yeah. That's a great story.
That's a great story.
I was shocked. In all fairness, I would have told her, like, no, please give him your stuff. Don't die. But
yeah.
I'm not going to take away from what did happen. I'm not going to tell. Like, if you got it down in a way and it was safe enough to act and protect yourself, fine. Sorry about your pinky. It's sadly enough, it's a permanent injury. It's a boxer's fracture. So it's sitting down here. And until she gets surgery, that knuckle is probably not going to resituate itself. Mm. But hell, I think at least she was safe. That was the bottom line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is awesome. You kind of had to pivot a little bit during the pandemic, and you started doing some live streaming training, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to get people the information. I had to get people the martial arts that they were still looking to do. And so both for me as a combatant and as the gym owner, I opened up different social media platforms and started posting classes there, live stream events, and just videos like we see on my Instagram where it's just entertaining or it's lesson based. And I want to get people the information on martial arts as much as I could. For the gym, it was a matter of we need to keep getting people their classes. So I started to do full live stream 45-minute sessions just on the Facebook page. People could show up. They can do it from the safety of their own home or outdoors or wherever, and they could follow along with the activities that we were doing. Sometimes I have another student with me. If they're comfortable with that, they can help demonstrate, or just on my own. But it was something that I can still give to the students where they could show up. And I don't know how big those classes were because I couldn't always watch the camera, but I know I had people like commenting, asking questions, clarifications, because it's kind of hard to teach people when you're over the internet. It's not always going to work perfectly, but at least on a live, I could give them the information they wanted. And it also went a long ways to helping support the gym. Like I basically have all the links in my professional accounts on Bear Fiorda or Free MMA Gyms, the social media pages. And in these links, you can go and donate. And that was a huge thing for the gym itself when I started live streaming, is it gave people another opportunity. Oh, hey, if you want to support us, you could go to the link in my bio on both my Bear Fiorda page or the Free MMA Gyms page anywhere, and you could donate directly to us. And that helped a lot keeping the pandemic going, keeping the students involved, because when people donate or they pay for something, they feel invested. And so that was a good way to keep them coming to the classes and learning. So that way, when we got back to in-person, got back to a better sense of reality, of normalcy, it didn't feel like anything had changed for them.
Oh, that's awesome. What's kind of the future? Is it more gyms in different locations? Has anyone reached out to you about like a franchise? I mean, this sounds like a slam dunk idea that we clearly need more of.
I would love it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not rolling in the dough. I'm not balling by any means having this kind of business. It does make money. It does support itself and it has a lot of community support on top of that. My goal at some point would be to put one in every state. If I could have 50 of these, I've succeeded. That's my happiness right there. If we can go international, that is just icing on top. But I wanted to get at least one free MMA gym in every state, so at least everyone in some area, way, shape, or form has an opportunity to come and take part in martial arts and not sweat the gym fees, not be concerned that you owe $150 here, and if you don't pay it in the next couple of days, you're going to get a $30 late fee. And so on and so forth. And so that's what I would love. No one's reached out yet for franchising, but hey, one day soon or we'll just do it ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, the gym fees are obscene. $250 a month is like, at least around here, like that's what it costs.
Yeah, but I mean, it might be fair though. I mean, rent these days is astronomical.
I don't know anything about the back end. All I know is that it's definitely a barrier to entry for sure.
You want to be really careful about the gym and you want to look into it really well beforehand. Take as many free classes as they'll let you take, because you can get a gym ran by Conor McGregor, and because he's running this gym and he's in charge, they charge you $185, $220. And you're like, man, that's great. I get to train with Conor McGregor. No, you don't. You train with Joe Schmo, who had two pro MMA fights 10 years ago. Who he's good friends with Connor and was willing to take a lower paying job, or maybe it was an opportunity for him and their buddies, or maybe he just got hired randomly by one of Connor's people who didn't know any better. There was a UFC gym, and I think it was in the LA area, that hired a guy who had absolutely no jujitsu knowledge. He was the worst white belt in the world. They hired him as a professional jujitsu instructor because he said he was. They just like, cool, you need one? You're one? Great. Come on, let's go. We'll pay you per student per class. And he was making dough for a while. It actually came out that he made quite a few thousand dollars off this company before someone came in, realized he was a fraud, and videotaped him whooping his butt and getting him to admit that, yeah, I have no actual jiu-jitsu training. I don't know what I'm doing. I've just been YouTubing all my lessons.
So what do you look for? Like, what should someone, when they go into a gym, like, what are some things that, you know, should be either some red flags or, oh, okay, this place is legit?
And it's something that immediately comes to my mind is the first step to any gym membership, maybe after a free class or so, as you get to that payment process of, okay, how are we going to work this out? What's my monthly fee? Contracts are completely fine. They're a regular thing, but an upcharge after a period of time, that's a red flag. So they're like, okay, it's going to be $100 here. And after the first year, we move to 120 because you get put into a different class or a different, you're a special class now of competitor or of student. So we're going to charge a little bit more, give you a little bit more training. That's not true. It's just a way for them to upsell you because they want to make more money off you long-term. It has no value to the gym. If they were really hungering or needed that 120, they would have charged you 120 in the beginning, not let you go free for a year. Same thing with, like, if your gym involves belts, every gym that has belts for the most part has a testing fee. The fee is never extreme, maybe $50, maybe $70. It's never bad and it's occasional. But if gyms are like, okay, your testing fee is $100, but then your belt is also $100. But then the gi that comes with the belt that you have to wear the belt is $200. And nickel and diming you is a huge red flag. And that you can see really early on in the beginning. Things that are more long-term when it comes to fake gyms are like the abusive stuff. You got guys who are sexually harassing their students, who are physically, there was a video where this gentleman was taking his student in a judo class and he was a little boy and he was throwing him over his shoulder and he was slamming him to the ground for the lesson. And the boy would get up and say, well, I don't feel very good. I don't want to be a part of this lesson anymore. And he's like, well, you don't have a choice. And he'd pick him up and throw him again.
Damn.
A credible competitor, an absolute monster for a teacher and gym owner. And he killed this kid. He gave him a concussion. He went to the hospital, fell into a coma and died. So that's more of a long-term flag. When they don't have the respect for their students or they don't have a certain level of physical care for their students, and you start picking up on, man, people are getting hurt here on like a regular basis. This is not a good idea. And so that's another thing you can look out for. Or simply you get to the training, you get to the coach that day one and you're like, wow, everyone here sucks. How long have you been here for? Oh, I've been here for 7 years. Well, you look like ass. I'm not going to train here anymore. So it's a few things that can tip you off immediately, or you got to really pay attention because the more manipulative, the more, I don't want to say evil as a person because I don't know how well that plays out, but the more, I'm going to go ahead and say evil. The more evil a person is, the longer it can take to feel them out and see what's going on, because the more abusive stuff, like what happened to the girl I talked about just a little while ago, that didn't happen day one. It's a buildup. And if you're not paying attention, you get sucked into it like a cult. And then you're stuck for years until you figure out or someone pulls you out. So just some things to keep in mind. Nickel and diming is a pretty big red flag. What they're teaching isn't credible or can't be used. Maybe they don't have competitors or never had competitors who could fight out of the gym. That's a pretty big red flag if you're going for a competition standard. And of course, anything that seems abusive, whether they're yelling at their students, physically putting their students in harm's way, being inappropriate. These are all things you can pick up on either in the beginning or maybe a little while in long term. And the biggest thing to help you, Google reviews. Literally just check out what people say about this gym. One or two may be intentionally bad. That's a hard maybe though. Oftentimes there's a little bit of truth behind everything people say. Once you cut away some of the emotion, you're like, oh, he's the meanest person ever. He's out to get me. He hates me. Well, okay, he probably doesn't have anything against you, but maybe he's just a giant butthole to begin with and I don't want to go to his gym.
Hmm.
That's a good point.
That's a great point. I didn't think about any of those.
Yeah.
So how can people donate to you? How can we get you some money?
So like I talked about earlier briefly, and I'll say it a little more explicitly, on my professional pages, I have my at Bear Fiorda and my at Free MMA Gyms all together, no space. There are links in descriptions of the social media pages of these apps, and you can click those to get to the various websites. And from there, you have options to donate, buy from a merchandise store, support directly on the app itself via gifts that a lot of these platforms now offer or make available. So as long as you get on the pages, Bear Fiorda or Free MMA Gyms, you have the option to donate to us directly. And especially via the Square link, which is the very first link on both those pages, that's to ensure your donation goes directly to us right off the bat.
Awesome. Thanks, Bear.
If anybody does donate, is there an ability to like tax deduct? Does they get a receipt or anything like that?
Yep.
Is a 501c3 you got?
They'll be able to tax that.
Okay. That's great.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, man. Good luck in a few days.
Hey, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it. It was fun being on here. I appreciate talking to you both.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Can we see you on, was it the 8th, right?
Yeah, it's on the 8th. It's Fight Pass for through the UFC, and it's on Fury FC. That starts at 4 p.m. For anyone interested, the prelims are at 4 p.m., and it'll carry into about 7 p.m. for the main event.
Awesome, man. We hope you kick his ass.
Oh, I'm definitely going to. And anyone who wants to watch it as well, live stream, you can follow me again at Bear Fiorda. That video, my fight will be live. I might catch some other my teammates' fights as well. So you don't have to, in case you're not buying Fight Pass, you don't have to miss out.
Well, that's perfect. Yeah. Well, we'll be watching, bud.
Thank you. I appreciate that, guys.
Good luck, man.
Thank you.
Time for some shout outs. Couldn't do any of this without our patrons. The way that the podcast sounds, the way that our website looks, it's all been funded by the Patreon. So thank you, Dalton Ferrer, Nick Stanley, Trevor Gordon, Blake Wilson. This one just says Eric. It's like share. Tyler Thurman, Kyle McClendon, Daniel Flores. Here's another one. Peter. Thank you, Peter. Cody Richardson. Gabriel Fragoso, ooh, that's a nice name. Aaron Ewing, Mason Marty, Zach Wachilis, I'm going to mess this one up, Thomas Thelliker, Ralph Crawley, Mark Burkhart, Heath Melton, and finally, Hannah Miller. Thank you all so much. If you like what you're hearing, you want to support us, head on over to our website at the-standard.us. Think about joining the Patreon. It's just going to make this show better and also a ton of benefits for yourself.